My name is Lila, and I'm an alcoholic. Well, I've had to do a lot of things that have been challenging in my sobriety. But following Wilson, Paulina, and Sheila up here may be the biggest of all. I've attended a few of these things, but I can tell you, you are the most enthusiastic group of people that I have encountered. Sorry. You know, in talking with Wilson, he's so serious, you know. I thought you would. Susan had given, I believe, your committee my tape. I thank you, Susan, for the opportunity to visit Vancouver. And if the hospitality that I have received from Wilson and Paulina and the rest of you is anything representative of AA in Vancouver, you're very fortunate people. I brought a little cold with me. I'm going to leave it here. Oh, God. So in talking to Sirius Wilson, I thought, well, I'm going to have to give one of those serious kind of talks, but I can see that that is hopeless in this case. Which is just as well. Because I have found out over the years that I'm sober that my God does a lot better job than I do. So we'll just wait and see if he knows where Vancouver, British Columbia, is. Maybe yes, maybe no. Is it warm in here, or is it just me? It's warm, thank you. I've had lots of changes in my life, including that one, and I'm not sure now. I hate when I start that way. It's downhill from there. And I promised Wilson, you know, that we'd talk about serious AA. Because after all, here in Canada, don't you have serious AA? And I had a wonderful opportunity to talk to Susan, and she explained to me about the integration between the gay community and the lesbian community in Alcoholics Anonymous here in Vancouver. And I can tell you also, with Chris and a number of my friends, we've attended many Marty and a lot of them conventions. And I tell you, one of the things that stands out here is that you're all mixed up in the room. I have been to conventions where I have seen the men on one side and the women on another. And I've seen little cliques and little groups. So I want to congratulate you on being outstanding members of Alcoholics Anonymous and leaving your differences outside of the room. So what is it about, really? The real question is it Darcy? I don't know about you with these countdowns, but when I see someone with one day be given a book by someone with 38 years, I am so secure and confident that the program of Alcoholics Anonymous will perhaps go on for another 60 years, don't you think? It's rather remarkable when you think about it that in 1935, two guys, okay, we showed up soon enough, all right, don't get too confident now. Everybody associates alcoholics with Skid Row bums. I mean, you had a proctologist and a stockbroker, and the next one was a lawyer. It's amazing that we're here, don't you think? And our program is based on information and the support of non-alcoholics. I think that's really important. I was talking about it not too long ago. Do you know that the guy that went to Europe that supported bringing the solution to our program, the spiritual solution, through Carl Jung, that actually when he went to Europe, I don't know if you know this, but he went looking for Freud. And it's a good damn thing he didn't find him. Can you imagine what it would be like for us if our solution was that on the couch, huh? I just wanted to check your sensitivity. So in 1935, these two guys founded a program. Here we are in 1994. Can you imagine that? 90,000 meeting strong every week. 141 countries. I love that information. Over 2 million registered, whatever. No one's ever counted me, but I've been part of a group somewhere. Members of Alcoholics Anonymous, and those are just the people where the groups are listed. Isn't it great to know that at 8:30 or at 10 o'clock in the evening, if you choose, you can just stop whatever you're doing and you can participate in the prayer of your choice with 2 million alcoholics. I suppose when they wrote a chapter of the vision for you, they were really, really far-sighted, don't you think? Because here we are, proud members of Alcoholics Anonymous, proud gay and lesbian men and women, in a beautiful city, sober, on a lovely night. How did we end up here? You know, the question must enter your mind. Would we drink with each other? I don't know. Obviously we did. And if you have 38 years, or if you have 24, or if you have one day, the real question is, how do I stay? One more day. I suppose if I've had to do anything that has required all of me, it is to live a day at a time. The importance of it now is probably more so to me than ever before. Granted, when I first joined Alcoholics Anonymous, it was really important to me because I was afraid that I would drink. And I only lived a day at a time for fear that I would drink. That was the only reason. And I only stayed in Alcoholics Anonymous because I was afraid I would drink. I certainly did not walk in here terrific, happy, contented, and have everybody say, well, welcome to Alcoholics Anonymous. We only take well people here. I walked in only because it didn't work anymore. Only because it did not work anymore. I was the kind of alcoholic that when I drank, it worked for me when I thought about it. That's very important for me. Because anything I give power to now, that ultimately will render me powerless, it only works when I think about it in advance. The thought, my mind. So when I would think about my scotch, I know there are people in the room who don't drink scotch. I know one. Never touched her lips, she tells me. However, that was my drink of choice, was scotch. If there was no scotch, I drank anything that was brown. There was nothing that was brown, I drank anything that was white. And then I didn't care after that. I will tell you, however, that up until today, with alcohol or without, I have never had a drink in a small glass. I have never had a drink with an umbrella, a cherry, an onion, toothpick, or any of that other stuff in it. I just don't understand it to this day. Can you imagine occupying a glass with all of that nonsense? I drank my scotch in a tall glass, room temperature, warm preferably, and I drank it straight, and I gulped it. I drink water the same way today. And I had it everywhere. I had it in the trunk of my car and in my desk and not exactly in my desk at work. There I had something far more acceptable. I had a drawer full of Vicks cough syrup. I must have gone through 6 or 7 of them a day. Sociably acceptable. Hershey bars, black coffee, Vicks cough syrup. And I wonder why cough medicines do not work for me today. Now I take an antihistamine and I'm up all goddamn night. Now, the good thing about having had it everywhere, you know, I used to hide it too, you know. I didn't think I did. I was about 5 years sober when I realized I actually did. Well, I found it, okay? Years later, a shoebox. I lived alone. Didn't have to hide it. Didn't have to hide it in the car. Didn't have to hide it at home. Didn't have to hide it anywhere. But I always knew where it was. I cannot recall a time when I did not know where my next drink was coming from. I don't understand an alcoholic that would put themselves in that kind of position. I will tell you that in my sobriety, I'm exactly the same way about Alcoholics Anonymous and meetings. No matter where I am in the world, no matter where I have been, no matter where I'm going to go, I know and I will find out where there's a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. I always know. I need it. I need my sobriety with the same kind of vigor and passion that I drank. So as a result, I find great similarity between alcohol and sobriety, between recovery and the disease. And I think it's a matter of changing my habits. That's all. Changing it from hiding the bottles to hiding the meetings. Because it's all in my mind. You see, when I thought about having that drink, no matter what the stage of my disease happened to be, when I just thought about it, I already felt better. Just knowing I was going to have a drink. When the reality of that hit me as I was sober a while, I was astounded that before I ever had the alcohol go down my throat, it worked for me. I knew it was going to work. I mean, that is the power of my mind. It's when I knew I had one of those alcoholic minds that they talked about. Why, when I thought about having that drink, I grew taller. I'm 5'11" now. Now, when I drank it, my body became stronger. My arms went back in the sockets. My heart stopped palpitating. My breathing subsided. My head suddenly didn't hurt anymore. And by the time it hit my stomach, I had all the strength that anyone would ever need to survive in this world. By the time I had my second drink, my mind was sharp, intuitive. Alcohol was doing for me what I could not do for myself. The promises were working for me. When I drank, I found a new half. I did the promises that way, you know. You just change the words if you want to have fun tonight. You go home and you just say, when I drank, and you change one of the promises. I'm afraid to do it here because I did it not too long ago, a couple of Sundays ago at a meeting that I was speaking at, and there was an earthquake right in the middle of my talk. 5.3, and I'm at the podium. I thought, all right, I will never again fool around with any of the written literature in Alcoholics Anonymous. My God. God, I had a good friend of mine, Don Madden, called me the next day. He said, oh, how I resent you, that you would have been the one at the podium during an earthquake. Oh, God. So that was the kind of alcoholic I was. Do you need to know more? I don't think you could stay in Alcoholics Anonymous 24 plus years unless you were a real alcoholic. My God, to deal with each other as sober people, think about it. Nobody would hang around here. How could we possibly? I'm here because I don't have anywhere else to go. I'm here because it works. I'm here because I found a solution. I'm here because I stopped hurting in a way that I had never hurt before and that I never want to hurt again. I'm here because my soul was dying. I'm here because the candle was going out. And I realized that it was just a little flicker and it was just a matter of time. I did not care if I physically died. What was the point? I had already lived far longer than I anticipated living, and I got here when I was 22. Not bad. Looking, I mean. I heard a woman when I was newly sober. She was sober 1,000 years. She looked fantastic. I thought, Jesus, this works. Can you imagine being a woman about to enter the 47th year of life, 24 and a half years sober? How exciting it is. Can you imagine that? It's something I couldn't imagine. When I drank on that third drink, after the first one took care of my body, and the second one eased my mind, the third one catered to my soul. And when it worked, it made me dream. And I could fantasize, and I could go away. And alcohol and I became best friends, best lovers, best parent, best everything, because it took me away. It took me to where I could become whatever it is that I wanted to become. I could tell lies and believe them. I could find you in a bar and you'd believe them too. And out of courtesy, I'd believe yours. So why did I come here if I had this great friend that could take me away? I gave it a lot of power alcohol. They talk about it in the first step of the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. We admitted we were powerless over alcohol. You give that much power to alcohol, it will render you powerless, and it will leave you. And it left me. Thank God there's a second step in Alcoholics Anonymous that talks about coming to believe in a power greater than ourselves. I have found something in Alcoholics Anonymous, a power that's so great and so big, that it will never, ever, ever render me powerless. It's got all the power of all of you, and all the power of all the people that Wilson talked about that have gone on before us, and all the people that have ever been. My God is all there is. I found that God in Alcoholics Anonymous. I think it's important to talk about God. When I joined Alcoholics Anonymous in 1969, they said to me two things. Clean house, find God. They were very short-spoken then. We tend to get quite carried away with ourselves now. There's these old guys at the hole in the ground in Huntington Park, California. And it's exactly what it sounds like. You go down 12 steps into a hole in the ground, and they saved my life. And they told me very important things that I can tell you in my living today are more important than they have ever been to me. Easy does it. First things first. But for the grace of God, there go I. My first day. Live and let live. Live and let live. I don't even have it now. Think, think, think. I hated that sign. Think through the consequences of the drink. What does it mean now, years later? Think through the consequences of that act. They all apply more today in my living sober than they did before. They saved my life before. I stayed and I did not quit before my miracle. I have a life. I have a life that is very full to begin with. It's going to be full, more full. Why? How could it not be? I'll be sober one more day. I'm pretty confident about that. I believe. Your sobriety is contingent upon your spiritual condition, and mine is very sound. Mine is very sound because I never leave the fence posts, the guardrails, the fences of Alcoholics Anonymous. I was told at the beginning, and I believe them. Whether it's true or not doesn't really matter. Believe them anyway. You see, one of the great things about being rendered powerless is to believe anything. If you're really lucky, you've been surrendered. If you're really, really fortunate, you understand the first half of the first step of the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. If you're really lucky, you're sitting here tonight, and not only have you admitted that you're an alcoholic, but you're going to admit that you can never drink again for the rest of your life. The honesty of the first step, to say, I am an alcoholic. I'll tell you what's more honest than that. I can never drink again. It is not an option. It just is not an option. I don't care what happens in my life or your life. Alcohol is not an option. If you have the slightest reservation that maybe you could, you might, if only. I feel for you. I suggest you stay very, very close, because you're in trouble. Good thing that they put the second half of the first step in there about your life becoming unmanageable. So you'd have a hint of when that would be. I know now when my life becomes unmanageable, I can feel it. I feel it. I knew when I first got sober because it was evident. There was wreckage all over. People, places, and things in my path. So you clean it up. And in the next few years, you deal with the people. And in the next few years, you deal with yourself. And then in the next few years, you deal with God. Now, don't misunderstand. You're going to have God all along. But if you want to have a relationship with that God that is more profound than anything you've ever imagined, stay sober. It is not enough for me any longer to just not drink. I'm sober. Big difference. I have a sober mind and a sober body, and I have a soul that understands the memory of sobriety. I have retrospect. I have a lot of days. I'm creating a new pathway in my soul, a sober one. I'm replacing the pain. I'm putting it aside, not fighting it. I'm saying, yes, it existed. I came into this world as a child, a little baby. You know, little babies, unlike little horses or little elephants or little orangutans or little anythings. I'm mentioning elephants and orangutans because I've had one on my chest for 24 hours, bouncing up and down. But when they're born, first thing these little animals do is they dash out immediately, right away, and they start walking. And they're self-sufficient right away. Not us. Not us little human beings. We come in here completely helpless. Our mothers have to feed us, if we're lucky to have one, care for us. And so what is the first real lesson in life? Trust. That we must trust someone else. That every experience that we're going to get that's going to make us grow is going to be learned from another human being. How discouraging if you're a practicing alcoholic. If you're like me, if you turn out to be self-sufficient, you want money, property, and power, and prestige so you can alienate yourself from all the other creeps in the world. It wasn't long after I was born in Ireland. My mother's the Blessed Virgin reincarnation. My father was a drunk. They should have had enough with me, but unfortunately they had 6 more children. If you wonder about this disease, if you wonder about it at all, I'm on Alcoholics Anonymous standing in front of you today. My brother Billy, well, he has a slight personality problem. About every 15 or 20 years he drinks something, uses something. He's about a 15-year periodic. It's kind of an odd sort of thing. And then as everybody grew up, you can see the different ramifications of our disease. My sister Cynthia is now 6 or 7 years sober on the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. Her drug of choice was heroin. What is she doing on Alcoholics Anonymous? After she was a mule and all these things. Because the thing she couldn't handle was vodka. And when the police took her home, instead of putting her in prison, she was so offended that she might be an alcoholic. She joined Alcoholics Anonymous in a rage to prove that she wasn't. And my brother Aidan. My brother Aidan died at 21. He's with the friends that Wilson mentioned from this disease. He's here tonight. When I talk, I invite everyone. I have found out how to be inclusive in Alcoholics Anonymous. My brother attends every meeting that I do. I need him now more than I've ever needed him before. I like these direct links. My brother Matthew is 16 years sober on the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. Can you imagine? He's got 3 children. They go to Alitot or something. Wouldn't you like to be in one of their sharing meetings? And Sharon, my sister Sharon, I love my sister Sharon. If there's an angel that exists on earth in physical form that I can see, it's my sister. Now, she wanted to belong to something. So she's been a member of Al-Anon for 16 years. And I'm not allowed to say anything about Al-Anon. But she listens to these tapes, and it's just not worth it. Five of us were born in Ireland. My sister Sharon, the Al-Anon, of course, was born in Canada. Toronto. And my brother Jerry, the American. My brother Gerard Kennedy Ryan, you can tell when we came to the United States. And we are saving a seat for my brother Jerry. I hope he makes it. I can't help him. I can only pray for him. I can't rescue him. And I'd give my heart to do it. That is the family of the disease of alcoholism. But it's the family in recovery. It's the family on the way to a new life. We had some relatives over not too long ago from Ireland. My Aunt Lila and my Uncle Neil. And I had some memories come back to me. And it was very, very good. Because I realized that I was drinking and smoking at 3. I'm 24 years sober, and it shocks me to think that I was drinking and smoking at 3. I wish I'd known it all these years when I gave dramatic drunkalogues. Guinness is stout. It's good for you, you know. A little sugar. So I'm an alcoholic. I think that my fear of dying, as I said earlier, from the disease of alcoholism, was not important. I didn't care whether I died, because I never thought that I would see 21 years of age. I never thought that I would see 47. Can you imagine? I used to sit in those bars, and I didn't care if I killed you either, by the way. I was one of those drive-drunk people. I did everything independently. I was totally self-sufficient. Oh, unless somebody got in the way. And when it stopped working for me, it just stopped. It was the quickest thing I've ever seen. One day I was functioning, and one day I wasn't. One day I had my car, and one day I lost it. One day I was pleasant to be around, and the next day I was breaking a bottle of scotch against the wall and threatening to slit your throat if you got in my way. One day I was making love with whomever happened to be around. No, don't misunderstand. I've always been of the same persuasion. Or I was on my way to some nut house because they were tying me down in the back of the car because I'd flipped out. And I never knew which way it was going to go. And that's how I ended up. I ended up by myself in my apartment with the doors closed and the windows closed and the melancholy music on and my form of razor blade. Doesn't matter what you use, and my alcohol. Can't say that I don't cooperate. Now, you suppose you might like to know why I stayed. Did I stay because I loved everyone in Alcoholics Anonymous? No, I hated everyone in Alcoholics Anonymous. In fact, I used to sit at the back of the meetings with a big, imagine, submachine gun. And I would just blow off heads randomly. I didn't mention it for years until there was another woman that did the same thing.
I asked her what kind of gun she had. And how did she pick the people? I mean, T-shirt color, hair color, what was her? And, you know, California, it's getting pretty rough. Now they have real guns, so I don't discuss it anymore. You never know. When I first got sober, I shook so badly, and I was so paranoid, and I was so terrified, and I want the man with one day to hear this, that when I left the meetings and I went home, I shook and I was scared and I was terrified, and I didn't hear anybody say to me, this is part of the disease, this is part of the recovery. I went to my apartment, I moved all the furniture into the front room, I slept facing the door, I slept with the lights on, and still they came in the night to get me. I was so paranoid and so alone and so terrified. I thought, how can I possibly live sober? What is the point of living sober? But I couldn't drink anymore. I was more afraid to drink than to be sober. Just enough of a moment, just enough of a surrender for a miracle to occur in my life. I think the greatest prayer I have ever prayed is down on my bathroom floor, drunk, hanging on to my porcelain whatever. Coming out of a blackout, finding myself saying, God help me, because I would never have said that in my right mind. Now, no matter what my circumstances are, I don't care over the years who I have been with or what it is. I get down on my knees every night and I ask my God to help me. I just don't do it with the desperation that I did it before. I do it now with the expectation of a miracle, because I got one. And I've been getting them every single solitary day all these years. Every single solitary day. I haven't been there for all the days. I'm just now, able to show up for most of my day. I'm just now, able to have my moments and make the best of them. I don't care if I was 101 up here tonight. I would still be grateful for that. I might reach 101. I might reach it. I'll reach it sober. I got the funny feeling I'll be taking big bites out of big moments. I can't imagine not doing it. I can't imagine living without miracles. I can't imagine my soul ever not expanding again. I can't imagine making room in my life for my God and the people I love, and the feelings that I have, and the things I don't know. I know so much, I know what I do not know. As a result of the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, I have stepped into an entire arena in my life that is new to me, brand new to me. The arena of my soul. I'm integrating with my higher self. Can you imagine such a thing? I don't intend to wait until I die for some golden being to lead me somewhere. Get here now. I'm an alcoholic. I drank. I would have drunk all there was to drink. I am now a sober member of Alcoholics Anonymous with a mission. I want all there is, and I want it now. How do you get it? I've been getting it. I didn't know it. Because for years, I would say, oh my God, that was a great spiritual experience that I had had. And if it wasn't for running against the wall one more time, I would not have had that tremendous spiritual experience. And if it wasn't for falling down on my knees and bleeding to death, I wouldn't have had that tremendous spiritual experience that has accelerated my growth. You know what now? I am my spiritual experience. I'm in the middle of it. I'm doing it. I'm living it. It is today. I'm responsible for it. I expect it. I want it. I don't know whether it's right or wrong. I'm giving up right and wrong, good and bad and judgment. It's interfered with me my whole life. I'm so sick. I'm sick and tired of being sick and tired of judging. I would have been an alcoholic anyway. But I got the funny feeling I would have been a more contented alcoholic if I'd ever learned to judge. My defense in this world, if the bottom line be done and said with, and all the rest of it and all the thousands of inventories, is that I cover my fear up with judgment of you and judgment of me. And I'll tell you something, the next half of my life, one day at a time, I have asked for that to be removed. I expect that they will cause enormous changes in my life, because it's going to require enormous change in me. Big changes for me. I will have to accept that which I do not want to accept. I will have to be aware of when I am not accepting you. I will have to be aware of when I am not accepting myself. Thank God for the steps of the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. Thank God that God loves me. And I'm beginning to feel it. You heard the story about the little girl. And her mother and father had a brand new baby. A little baby boy. Didn't have to be a boy, but I like girls better. No. Had a little baby boy. And they brought the little baby home from the hospital. And the little girl was insisting to her parents that she talk alone, by herself, with this little baby. And she was very, very insistent. And are they not parents of the 1990s? They thought, Silver, she's going to kill the kid. Naturally. So they were very concerned about how in the world they were going to be able to let this happen. Oh, no, we cannot let this happen. But she was very insistent, this little girl. Maybe 5, 6, 4, I don't know. So one day they decided they had to do it. So they got the baby monitor, and they hooked it up to the pillow beside the baby, and they had a baby monitor outside the door, and they were wired. They thought, now, as soon as she smothers them, we'll just run. Typical average judgmental thinking, wouldn't you say? And the little girl went into the room ever so quietly, and she closed the door, and she went up to the crib, and she whispered gently into the little tiny baby's ears, "Help me. Help me. I'm beginning to forget God." I don't know if your mother or your grandmother or anyone that loved you ever told you that the babies play with the angels. I think they do. I will tell you something that you might want to look forward to, unless you have gone before me, in such case you know. My prayer now, one of them, is help me. I'm beginning to remember God. I am beginning to remember God. I want to sleep with the angels now. I want to clear my mind, and I want to sleep with the angels at night. How do you do all of this? Isn't it amazing that the same 12 steps that got me sober bring me to the angels at night? Bring me to miracles in my day. Bring me to expect a miracle. Bring me to never quit before my miracle. Bring me to not judge myself for being a human being. Bring me to a place where I actually love myself. I don't do everything right. As a good friend of mine has said, do we not have clay feet? Oh, yes, I do. But for the first time in Lila's life, she loves herself, even with her clay feet. Why is that? God loves me. I'm not judged. If I walked up to any one of you, complete strangers in another country, and I said to you something that I had done that was horrific, you would say to me, "Oh, Lila, how could that be?" But does it matter now? Sit down. Have a cup of coffee. Did you eat today? It's important that you sleep. Perhaps you'd like a banana. And you must go to a meeting tomorrow, because the fellowship is important. And if you eat and if you sleep, and if you stay with the fellowship and you go to meetings, everything else will be all right. Now, if you're going to love me that much, and that's all it takes to feel safe in the world, I want to give that back to me. It is a direct result of the steps of the program of Alcoholics Anonymous that I stand before you, that I feel as though I am who I am, that I'm going to walk out of here a proud and sober woman and a member of Alcoholics Anonymous. I understand what it means to be powerless over alcohol and that my life is unmanageable because I'm honest enough to know that I will never drink again for the rest of my life. I have enough hope to come to believe. Every time I come to a meeting, I activate coming to believe. Every time I talk to a newcomer, I activate coming to believe. Every time I talk to you, I activate coming to believe. That God will restore. It doesn't say make new. It doesn't say build again. It says restore. That will bring me back to remembering. That I will be brought back. That I will be restored. To what? To sanity. I think to know what sanity is, you have to know what insanity is. Insanity is thinking it will be different this time. Going out of here and saying, I'd like a bottle of scotch, please. I just talked to the thing in Vancouver, and I'd like to feel better tonight. This time it's going to be different. It is never, ever going to be different when your solution is a disease. It is only going to be different when you have soundness of mind and your solution is to make a decision to be sane. And how do you make the decision? Well, God willing, you'll have the third step in the faith of that step in the program for Alcoholics Anonymous. You'll make a decision to turn your will, which is your thinking. Your thinking. I don't know anybody that's left Alcoholics Anonymous that didn't think about it first. And if you go out of here tonight, you'll go out of here stone, cold, sober, you'll make that decision. So don't blame it on the bottle that falls out of the sky and jumps down your throat. Blame it on your thinking. Blame it on your thinking. The thinking that you should have been listening. Want to survive AA? Stop talking and listen. At least 15 years. And courage. Thank God for the fourth step and the courage to take it. The step that represents courage, a fearless moral inventory. Sounds very serious, doesn't it? There are pamphlets and booklets and all kinds of garbage out now. Excuse me, it's an opinion. My first inventory was on a yellow piece of paper a guy put in my hand with a pencil that slipped out of my hand because I was so freshly sober. Over the years, I've done 1,000 inventories. I have the courage to do an accurate self-appraisal. What does it get down to now? What am I afraid of? And who do I judge? In between those two points is the destruction of my life. If it weren't for the integrity of the fifth step where I can talk to someone, give it to God, give it to a spiritual advisor, give it to a sponsor, or come to a meeting so I can determine whether it's real or imagined, whether I'm sane or insane. How do I know that? How does the fifth step work for me? I go to a meeting and I listen to you, and believe me, I find out whether I'm normal or not. Oh, but after integrity, you have the opportunity to have willingness. The sixth step, the step of willingness. What does it mean we're entirely ready to have God remove these defects of character? It means contrary action. It means after you do 1 through 5, if you want 6 to work, stop doing whatever it is that harms you or others. Hardest thing you're ever bloody well going to have to do. Drank over us, didn't we? Want to make room for God? Stop the behavior. Want to make room for God? Stop the action. Want to make room for God? Go back and start at 1. Find out why you're unmanageable and you don't have enough honesty to look at it. Find out where your hope went because you don't have enough faith to make the decision. Go back to 4 and have a little more courage. Run out there and have a little integrity and listen to somebody else. And you'll become willing really fast. And if you're so lucky to do that much, you'll get to the 7th step of the program for Alcoholics Anonymous and you will have experienced humility. Humbly ask God to remove our shortcomings. I found out about my God. That when I go to my God and I am judging myself and I do not accept myself, I will not feel humbled. Because my God smiles at me and said, Lila, I love you. I will take you just as you are. I will take you with your clay feet. I will take you with all of your confusion, your indecision, your lack of understanding. I will take you as you are, and I will bring you to where you need to go. However, it is your job to make room for me. And since the only people that seem to get into my way most of the time are you, I then think it's not a mistake that they put 8 and 9 after all these 7 steps. And that I would even have the compassion to care for you now is amazing to me. But I have learned to have some compassion for myself in the 7th step, because if God loves me, I might be able to love you. Still working on it. And in the 9th step, I can keep my side of the street clean, sense of balance, that I would even want to. That I would even want to. That I am more than willing to take responsibility for what I do. All those steps work. They become a working part of my life. They're everywhere. I hide them in my car, and I hide them in my house, and I hide them in my drawers. I hide them in my pocket. They're part of me. I breathe them. I feel them. I practice them. And just when I think it might all go away, there's the 10th step, the step of perseverance. So that you can go out throughout the day, and at any time, say to yourself, "Oh, Lila, what are you doing now?" Before I would judge myself. Now I would just say, "God, I don't know what the hell I'm doing now. Is it harming me or someone else directly? If it isn't, I've got time to figure it out. If it is, I must handle it immediately." And if I do that, I have the 11th step of the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. Step of spirituality. Because you see, when I did 1, 2, and 3, I was by myself. And when I did 4 through 10, I was looking for a God. But as soon as I did 10, and I do it every day, and I do 11 every morning and every night, I have my God. I have made room for that God. I have cleared the path as a result of the 10 steps, and I found a God. I have a conscious contact. Conscious contact. Conscious contact. It has made me childlike in my approach. It has made me bring back an angel and stand it on my right. It has made me lean into that angel. It has made me talk out loud. It has made me do all the childlike things I must do as I am beginning to remember my God. And why do I keep doing all of this? Because I was trained at the beginning to take the 12th step of the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, the step of service. That I would have a spiritual awakening as a result of those steps. And then it was my responsibility to practice these principles in all of my affairs, carry this message to alcoholics who still suffer. And that if I make room for that, I will be making room for God and for myself. I want to thank you for the opportunity that you've given me to do that. I appreciate visiting your country and your city. I think you're as gracious and as kind as courteous as I was told. Thank you.